across from me, we got downtown Buffalo, New York. Some people say the armpit of America. I don't like that term. You know what I like? The beautiful Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo. 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 Buffalo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Kyle Salagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. The Buffalo Bills, along with the other 31 NFL teams, have finalized their 2020 NFL draft hauls. They made all their picks. Some of them were good, some of them were not. And today we're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the picks, specifically the ones that the Buffalo Bills made. We'll talk about other teams as well, but what we're going to be focusing on, given that this is a podcast published by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire, we're going to focus on the picks that the Buffalo Bills made. We'll grade them, but we'll also talk about some of the other picks that were made around the league, specifically the Green Bay Packers, because D'Lo has some things to say about the Green Bay Packers. I think that's all we're doing today, given the fact that the draft just happened. That's kind of the biggest story in the NFL at this point. Maybe something else will break during this. Maybe Jadeveon Clowney will sign with the Bills, or Cam Newton will sign with the Patriots. They're both going to happen at this point. But I think that wraps it up. Yeah, that wraps it up. We're out of here, boys. No. So, that wraps up the intro. This is a three-act structure. We're at the end of the first act now. I'm going to introduce the people joining me today to talk about the NFL draft first. It's Justin DeLauro. D'Lo, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Nice.
Had a fun 3 days of watching the draft and seeing some very nice houses on TV.
A lot of nice houses. Cliff Kingsbury's house was insane.
Yes.
And Andy Reid's house was a patio. It was more a patio. No. That was Bruce Arians. I'm an idiot. Yep. Sorry. I confused the two old white coaches. I confused one of the old white coaches with one of the 20 other ones. But, yeah, Bruce Arians had a nice patio. Andy Reid had a nice shirt. I think that's what Andy Reid was rocking, was the Hawaiian shirts every day. Sean McDermott had a nice house, apparently. Sean McDermott, you can tell that he spent a lot of money at the 716 stores, the Buffalo stores scattered around Western New York, because he had one of the Buffaloes you can get there. He had, like, a wooden map. I was like, wow, Brandon Bean had a nice setup. You know, these are all millionaires. These people are getting paid millions of dollars to pick these kids on day three who are going to make $300,000 or something. They'll make more than that, but obviously, I don't want to get into a commentary on the NFL and how all of that works. So, also here, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, what up?
Man, I'm just chilling. Had a bonfire last night, and I'm feeling it the next morning.
Did you social distance?
Yeah, we were social distancing. It's the people I've been quarantining with, so, you know.
Ah, GG.
So, yeah, you know, we're all good. We're not doing anything, you know, not breaking any laws.
The law.
Although I did see a lot of houses with more than six people in them.
Yeah, there were.
Depends on the state. Depends on
that
the state.
That is true.
Well,
you're getting drafted, you're going to have a house full of people.
Are we doing a house power ranking? We'll include
Cliff Kingsbury.
Everyone.
Kingsbury won.
Zach Moss had a nice house. That's kind of a preview, but Zach Moss had a real nice house.
Oh, so did Tua.
Tua had a nice house. I'm trying to think.
Had an average house.
Yeah, Joe Burrow had like the average Athens, Ohio house, I would feel. Though his father...
He did not look thrilled. You know, when
nobody looked thrilled. Everyone looked miserable throughout the entire night, to be honest. Everyone just looked like, oh, this is exactly how I imagined getting drafted.
Yeah.
This is exactly how I envisioned it growing up. With an ESPN camera next to my television. But yeah, so let's get into the draft, because I don't want to, you know, as much as people, what everyone loves about this podcast is the 20 minutes of beating around the bush before we get into the topic, but we're not going to do that today. We're just going to get straight into it. The NFL draft occurred. Joe Burrow, as we said, first overall pick to Cincinnati. Chase Young, second overall pick to Washington. Before this started, before the draft started, like in the weeks leading up to it, specifically like the couple of days leading up to the draft, you heard scouts come out from NFL teams, anonymous scouts, the dreaded anonymous scouts, come out and say the media is as wrong about this draft, if not more wrong, than they've been at any point in recent memory. Nobody knows where anyone's really going to go. But for the most part, I feel like it kind of went exactly how we expected it to go. Like, there were a few reaches here and there, but for the most part, I feel like everyone kind of went in the round they were expected to go, and there weren't too many big falls, and the falls that did occur were kind of warranted. They kind of made sense. You could understand why a player would fall. So I feel like all the hype of, oh, nobody knows how this draft is going to go was kind of overblown, because I feel like it kind of went exactly how we expected it to. Unless you're a Green Bay Packers fan. Because the Green Bay Packers kind of wilded out. They Matt LaFleur and company were like, we're going to wild out a little bit. We need some skill players. We need to, strengthen this just team in general. We were in the NFC Championship game last year, and we got embarrassed by the 49ers. So we need to add to this team. We need to get Aaron some weapons. So what did they do on night one? They draft Aaron Rodgers' replacement, which is bold. They draft Jordan Love. Second round. Was it second round they got A.J. Dillon?
A.J. Dillon, second round.
You sound thrilled.
Let's go, Green Bay. It's like mind-numbing. You know why it's weird? It's weird because I'm not yelling about the Bills. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely mind-numbing because this team, okay, I get it. They want to have the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers. Fine. The dude's not going to play for 3 years if Rodgers is there. So I don't know how you're going to really figure out how to evaluate him. But whatever, it's why I'm not the GM. But then in the second round, you have the deepest wide receiver class probably, arguably, in the history of the NFL draft, and you don't take a wide receiver at all. And you're coming off a season where you just got slammed in the NFC Championship game, so you're close. But at the same time, you're in an opportunity where you can still build for now and the future, because Jordan loves the future. Whatever, like, you draft him in the first round, that's it. He's your guy for the future. But as you get in the second, third round, there was a boatload of talent that this team could have taken. So they decide, you know what? Let's go A.J. Dillon. Because you know what will fit? Somebody who could be a sidekick to, you know, Aaron Jones, who can't play on third down. Good pick there. And then they get him, a developmental tight end from Cincinnati.
Who was like a late day three prospect.
He's going to be, maybe he'll be Travis Kelce. Who the hell knows? And then they get drunk, and then they draft three more offensive linemen. And all three of their picks in the sixth round were offensive linemen. They're not even trying.
It's a bold strategy. They may have had the worst draft.
Like, this is a terrible, terrible draft. Like, and it, like, whatever. Say what you want about Love. Like, I wasn't too impressed with it, but I kind of get it. But
right.
At the same time, it's like, if he's just going to sit on the bench for 3 years, what are we doing? I guess we'll pick up his fifth-year option now. It's just infuriating, but they could have easily gotten a wide receiver in the second round or the third round. Whatever. If they like DeGuerra or whatever dude's name is from Cincinnati, whatever. Hopefully he's like the next Travis Kelce, and then all of this is, a moot point. But in the second round, go get yourself a freaking wide receiver who can catch the ball.
Yeah, you bring up Travis Kelce, but from what I've read, I've read one tweet, but I've heard that they want to make DeGuerra, they want to play him like the 49ers use Kyle Juszczyk, which, I mean, if that's how you're going to play him, you took a fullback in round three. you took Kyle Juszczyk is a good player, but would I take him in the third round of the NFL draft? I don't know.
I mean, no, Dillon probably would have been there. Well, they traded their fourth round pick, so that kind of.
But still, DeGuerra would have been there in the fifth round.
Yeah,
they could have traded back and gotten Dillon in the third or fourth.
Like,
probably.
I just don't get it, and it's so mind. And you have Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
So did they decide? Oh, he needed a compliment like a bowling ball. Like, that's what they decided with Dillon, and I hope Dillon's good. The problem
sirens
is,
going off. They're taking you away, dude.
Oh, God. The picks aren't necessarily... Like, the players themselves probably are going to be okay. It's just the value of the pick is horrendous. And it's like... It's like they auto-drafted.
No, if they auto-drafted, they would have taken better value.
It's like one of their kids came in and said, oh, I like the dude AJ. Boom, second round pick.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that just kept happening, right? Like, with...
Round after round for Green Bay, that's what
happened. Exactly. A.J. Dillon, I feel, was a reach. Again, I'm not saying he's a bad player. I just don't think you had to take him in the second round. DeGuerra, I think he's a good developmental piece. If you want to use him in, like, a Kyle Juszczyk role, I think he's a solid developmental piece. But he's a guy that Nick had mocked to the Bills in his final mock draft in round six. Like, yeah. DeGuerra wasn't a guy you had to take on day two. And here's the thing. I'm saying they had a bad draft, and I liked the Jordan Love pick. I think I'm one of the few who very much liked the Jordan Love pick, just because Jordan Love, when all is said and done, when we look back on this draft in 10 years, there is a distinct possibility that we are going to say Jordan Love is the best quarterback from this class, just because he is just an athletic specimen, if you will. That's weird to say about another person. but he is just he is a supreme athlete, just incredible player. He played at Utah State, and people kind of pointed his stats. Like, I talked to my friend Matt, who's a huge Packers fan, who was like, I don't like his college stats, especially not his latest year stats. And I was like, well, from what I understand, they kind of changed the offense. I think that he had a new coaching staff. He didn't have a very good team. He played at Utah State. But just when you watch the tape, you can see that he is special. Everyone says there's a little Patrick Mahomes to his game. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I do think he fits that mold. Well, Josh Allen fits that mold as well. Tall, athletic, good arm. There's a lot of quarterbacks who fit that mold. So I don't want to compare Jordan Love to Patrick Mahomes, but I do think he's a very talented player who has a very high ceiling. And I think Green Bay, I think I mentioned this on a podcast months ago, Green Bay was probably one of the best situations he could go to, either Green Bay or New Orleans. Because, I mean, now he can come in. He should not see the field in his rookie year. Nope. Now he's going to be playing behind arguably the most talented quarterback we've seen in the NFL in a long time. One of the best quarterbacks of all time. He's going to be sitting behind him for 2 or 3 years, and he's going to learn from him just as Rodgers did from Brett Favre. So I really like the Jordan Love pick. And, like, I think I told you, I think I wrote this in Slack. Like, people were questioning why when you have this roster and you need skill positions, why would you take a developmental quarterback? And I was like, well, instead of just going over the top and adding to this 2 or 3 year window, they extended their Super Bowl window 15 years. Because you're going to go from Rodgers, and if you trust yourself, you go from Rodgers to Love, and then your offense just continues. Because Jordan Love has the potential to be insane. That being said, I don't like their draft. Like, I don't like AJ Dillon. I mean, the value.
If that was your idea, and you said, you know what, we're good, and I don't know why we were so concerned about trading up to get Love. I don't know what team was going to trade ahead of them, and they only traded up 4 spots, but whatever. And if that's your idea, okay, fine. You're going to put Love on the bench for 2 to 3 years, let him develop the next couple years, kind of weed out some of those wrinkles from his game, especially from last year.
The decision-making.
Yeah, but then your second and third round picks can't be manure.
Yes,
with exactly. value. Now, I hope DeGuerra and Dillon are good players for Green Bay's sake. But I'm just, like, at that spot, you know what it feels like? It feels like they were sitting there and the GM was like, you know what? I'm going to get this guy. Mims is going to follow the 62. I'm going to do it. And then Mims goes 59th and he goes, you know what? I like running backs.
Yeah.
Get me Dillon. And then in the third round, they're like, you know what? Maybe, I don't know, Brian Edwards will fall. Well, he didn't fall that far. You know, Duvernay, who...
Duvernay, right?
Duvernay, who Baltimore selected. Baltimore, yeah. Like, maybe he'll fall. Nope. You know what? Let's go tight end. Let's just go tight end. Tight end fullback. You know, like, let's...
My goodness.
And neither of them were, as we've said, were the best player at the position on the board. Like, Zach Moss was on the board when AJ Dillon was taken, who the Bills ultimately got, thankfully. But, like, DeGuerra, I think only one or two tight ends had gone before DeGuerra. In a weak tight end class, only one or two had gone, and they get DeGuerra. And I guess you could argue, like, this is a very weak tight end class, so you kind of just pick one that you like. The value's kind of all over the place. But also, I think there were players better than DeGuerra. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Their value picks were just unreal.
I think when you're going to make a pick like Jordan Love in the first round, especially given their situation when they have Aaron Rodgers under contract for the next 3 or 4 years, if you're going to take a quarterback in the first round, you have to knock it out of the park with your day two picks and make solid value picks on day three, which they did not do.
And I hope they could have gone Antonio Gibson in the second round. They would have gotten their guy who could run the ball and who could be a wide receiver. And at least you could sit there and say, all right, at least we have a weapon for Rodgers now, probably going to be a weapon for Love in 3 years. And instead, what do? They just, here's a tight end. You know what we're going to do in the sixth round? We're just going to look at our sheet that just has offensive linemen. Throw out all the other ones, and let's get three of them.
Yeah, I don't get it. McKenna, how do you feel about the Packers draft?
I mean, I couldn't care less about the Packers draft. It's just funny seeing, like, that was the Bills for a really long time.
Yes.
Where you're just like, what are you even, like, what are you thinking? Like,
right.
John McCargo.
Exactly. Like, it's just terrible drafts after terrible drafts. Not that Brandon Bean's, you know, in charge and Sean McDermott are in charge. Like, they've had really good drafts, but I think this is honestly one of their best, in my opinion. But
the Bills?
Yeah, the Bills. This is one of their better drafts, I think, in terms of value.
Interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
I think they've gotten, like, at the top better players, but I think overall, consistently, they got really, really good value. They got really, really good value during this draft. So, but yeah, sorry for the Packers.
this is a bunch of rugged few years for me.
As I said, you could have tanked for Trevor Lawrence, but you have the quarterback of the future, Jordan Love.
Right. You have no reason. Well, you could take Jamar Chase second overall next year. So there you go. I don't want to get to the Bills yet. I appreciate the transition, McKenna, but I'm not going to take it. I want to talk about the Eagles draft, because the Eagles are another NFC team who kind of had a weird draft. They took Jalen Reagor 21, and a lot of people were kind of clowning the Eagles for that pick. And another thing, I like Jalen Reagor. Like, I like the pick of Jalen Reagor. I think he's a good wide receiver. If the Bills had held on to 22 and they were faced with Reagor or Jefferson, I would have been very pissed. if they were sitting at 22 and the Eagles took Reagor at 21 and then they were just left with Jefferson, I would have been like, God damn it. That is not good. But Jefferson's fine, but Jalen Reagor, people look at his height. People look at his height and think, oh, he's a speed guy. He's not really a go-up-and-get-it type of receiver. That is incorrect. Not only does he have speed, but he loves to go up and get the football. He is a jump ball, I wouldn't say jump ball specialist, but he is not adverse to the idea of going up and getting the ball. He has good body control. I like Jalen Reagor a lot. I think that's a good pick at 21, especially given everyone on the board. You could say Denzel Mims might be the better, like, red zone threat, but Jalen Rager's not a bad red zone threat because he can go up and get the ball. He has that athleticism, the strength, the ability to do it. So I don't hate the Jalen Reagor pick. The Jalen Hurts pick, on the other hand, that was weird, especially when you have Carson Wentz. It's almost as though they don't trust Carson Wentz. They don't think he's the quarterback of the future, just given, like, the whole, they really didn't surround him with weapons. I know they traded Nick Foles. That really kind of said that Carson Wentz was their quarterback, but they really haven't surrounded him with great weapons. And the time when they do surround him with a weapon, the time when they get him Jalen Reagor, with the next draft pick, they go with Jalen Hurts, a quarterback. And people are saying, like, oh, like, I think Alan Pergamon tweeted something like this. People are saying, like, you know, Jalen Hurts is going to be fine coming in to be the backup. Remember, like, last year when he transferred so he didn't have to be the backup? like, that doesn't make sense. He's fine being the backup. Okay, why did he transfer from Alabama if he didn't want to be a backup? Or if he wanted to be a backup? That really doesn't make any sense. But I don't know. Jalen Hurts is not better than Carson Wentz. I like Jalen Hurts, but I don't know if he's a long-term starting quarterback in the NFL. And maybe they're just taking him to be a long-term backup. But the Bills got their long-term backup in the fifth. and the Eagles got theirs in the second, and Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is probably better than Jake Fromm, but I don't think for Philadelphia that's a good pick. McKenna, how do you feel about Jalen Hurts, if you care at all?
I mean, I was pushing for Jalen Hurts to Buffalo in, like, the third or fourth round. But, you know, once he got off the board in the second round, I was like, what are the Eagles doing, like, what, like, it just doesn't make sense unless they're going to use him not as a quarterback early on. If they're going to, you know, try to, like, throw him out wide receiver, running back, you know, wildcat formations. But it just didn't make sense. And I would have liked him in Buffalo because, in terms of play style, very similar to Josh Allen. So it would have made sense for him to be Josh Allen's backup, not Jake Fromm. But, you know, Eagles are known for having interesting drafts, but, I mean, second round is a little too high for him.
People shit on the Eagles all the time, but, like, they won the Super Bowl what, 3 years ago?
Yes.
They made the playoffs how many years in a row? At least three. at least three. But, like, the Eagles kind of get shit on all the time, but I think the Eagles are a good team. I like Carson Wentz. Doug Peterson, I still think, is a good coach. Like, 3 years ago, Doug Peterson was the talk of the NFL. And now everyone's just kind of like, oh, he's okay. It's like, eh. I think
they have a good team. I think they have a good coaching staff. I don't know if their management's, like, their GM and, like,
Howie Roseman, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're the best. And I think that's sort of why they get shit on a lot. And they have allegedly terrible fans, so that also doesn't help.
Allegedly terrible. You just did the safest journalistic thing you could do. Say something bold, but put allegedly in front of it.
Allegedly. Report, they reportedly. The most terrible fans in human history. Allegedly. You know.
You love it. Are we ready to move on? Are we ready to get talking about the Buffalo Bills?
Or do you want to talk? Or do you want to talk about the Patriots' racist punter or kicker?
Oh, the Patriots' allegedly racist kicker punter.
Allegedly.
No, I don't want to talk about that.
Allegedly.
Though the evidence is pretty damning.
Hey, can I throw one more thing about Hurts?
Yeah.
So apparently, Doug Peterson said they plan on using him in a similar way as Taysom Hill.
I don't know if he's.
Do you think he would fit that?
No, I don't think he's that type of player. I don't think Jalen Hurts is the type of guy where, like, he's going to do anything the team asks him to do. I just don't know if he's capable of a Taysom Hill type role. And I mean, how crazy is it that we're living in a world where teams are taking players who could potentially be Taysom Hill in the second round? Like, I think this is the newest offensive fad, is the quarterback who can do it all, right? Joe Webb did it first, but...
you got to be a special team gunner to make that.
Exactly. That's what you got to do. Seriously, Joe Webb was Taysom Hill before Taysom Hill was Taysom Hill. I'm not lying. I mean, Joe Webb did it, and Joe Webb led the Bills to a win in a blizzard.
That's true.
Bring Joe Webb back. You know what? I'm ending the podcast here on this note. Bring Joe Webb back. There's our draft review. But yeah, no, I don't think. I mean, maybe I just don't. No, that's my take. No, Jalen Hurts cannot be Taysom Hill. He cannot do the Taysom Hill role. I don't think he's that type of player.
Beautiful.
Any objections?
No.
None here.
Cool. Moving on, the Buffalo Bills. They made picks in the draft. Six of them, or seven of them. How many did they
seven.
Make?
Seven.
One, two, three. It was seven picks. That's as many as they were supposed to make.
Yeah.
Given the number of rounds in the draft and how many teams or how many picks each team is allotted, that's the number they were supposed to make. Granted, they didn't make all of their picks because they traded their first and they picked up another sixth. But the Bills made seven selections in the NFL draft. And I'm going to be honest right off the top. There's a possibility only like four or five of these guys make the roster out of the seven. So we will get into the draft. I will quickly just go over the selections they made, and then we will go around the table and give our in-depth analysis, because that's what you come to this podcast for, is the in-depth football analysis. And we are going to go through each pick, give our in-depth analysis, as I said, and give it a grade. So the Buffalo Bills with pick number 54, second round of the draft, they took defensive end A.J. Epenesa out of Iowa. They finished off day two by taking Utah running back Zach Moss, kicked off day three by taking Gabriel Davis, wide receiver out of UCF, followed that up with Jake Fromm, quarterback out of Georgia. They took a player at the position that you could argue is the most important, and they followed that up in the sixth round by taking a player who plays the second most important position on a football team, and that's kicker. They took Tyler Bass out of Georgia Southern. They rounded out their draft by taking wide receiver Isaiah Hodgins and cornerback Dane Jackson. So I'll kick it off with D'Lo. D'Lo, what's your analysis on A.J. Epenesa, their first pick, and what's your grade on that as well?
Epenesa, I gave it an A. I mean, I was kind of leaning A minus, whatever. But Epenesa was a guy who had first-round talent. He slid into the Bills' lap, and it kind of made the Bills... It was an easy pick for the Bills to make, honestly. I mean, there was a lot of talent out there, but the idea of having a defensive end who can fill the role of Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison in a couple years, you know, especially with the aging position that the Bills have at defensive end, I thought it was a really good pick. Epenesa won't necessarily be like this like crazy speed rusher if you expect him to blow around the end and do like kind of what Jerry Hughes does, but Epenesa is a very powerful player. He's a versatile player. He can rush inside, outside. You'll see him probably use that defensive tackle a little bit. like on pass rushing downs that they used.
Right on third down, power packages.
Yeah, like with Alexander, like they've done in the past. So that's something he'll do as well. And I mean, I liked it. It's something where he's just a power player. You know, you're gonna see him hopefully over the next year or two develop a little bit more of an arsenal of pass rush moves, which I think will be helpful to diversify his game. And then from there, I think he's gonna be solid. I mean, I don't know if he's gonna be, you know, top tier with sacks, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's getting, you know, 8 to 10, you know, on average when all's said and done. You know, it wouldn't be shocking to see him, you know, knock out a half dozen in his rookie year as part of that rotation. So it's a pretty solid pick for them. It's impressive. He's a guy that on most draft boards he was gone. I actually did a piece about, you know, several defensive ends who could be around in round two, and I left him off because pretty much I thought he was going to be gone. And lo and behold, he fell into our lap. So it worked out pretty well for Buffalo on their end.
Yeah, I think it's a great pick. I just based off value alone and just given all of that, I kind of have to give it an A.
Yep.
Just because AJ Epenesa was a player even as recently as after the combine when the Bills still had their first round pick. We did a mock draft. I mocked AJ Epenesa to the Bills at 22 just because I thought he would have been a good value pick at 22. At 54, that's an insane value pick. I don't know why AJ Epenesa fell, as Brandon Bean said when they drafted him. I don't know why he fell, but it works out for us. AJ Epenesa, he's not, and this is why I think it works for the Bills. I don't think AJ Epenesa is ever going to be an elite pass rusher. But from what I've come to understand from Sean McDermott this and his defense and Brandon Bean's team-building philosophy as a whole, I don't know if the Bills are ever going to have that elite pass rusher. Just given the defensive line rotation, they like to get pass rush by committee. With Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison now, Trent Murphy, now AJ Epenesa. They like to get pass rush by committee, which is what AJ Epenesa kind of falls into. He's never going to be an elite pass rusher. He's never going to be, in my opinion, a consistent, you know, double-digit sack guy. I don't think you're ever going to see him consistently put up 12 or 13 sacks each year. But given how the Bills play defense and given how the Bills pass rush, how they rush the passer, I don't think they ever want him to be that. I think what he's going to be is initially at least a 35 to 40% snap guy. Eventually he'll take over for Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, once they ultimately, well, with Jerry Hughes retire and Trent Murphy go to a different team. But like, even then it'll be like, he'll be a 60 to 65% type of guy, and they'll get another guy to come in and compliment him. He's never going to be a elite pass rusher, but that's fine given how the Bills play defense. I think what he is a power rusher, as we've said. He's a very sound, technically sound, powerful player, wins with strength, wins with technique to an extent. And I think that's good. I think that's what they need. They needed a young defensive end to kind of develop along to play a handful of snaps this year before ultimately taking over for Hughes, Addison, Murphy, etc. I don't think he's ever going to be a flat. I don't know what I was going to say. I don't think he's ever going to be a flashy player, but that's not his play style. I don't think the Bills play flashy defense, or at least they don't play flashy on the defensive line.
Right.
I think he's going to be a player that you're eventually going to have to complement with a speed guy. I think next year or at some point in the future, you're going to see them add a speed rusher as well. I don't think AJ Epenesa is ever going to be a speed guy. He's not going to win with speed, but what I think he is a good, for now, 40% snap of the guy, or 40% of the snaps guy, eventually 60% of the snaps guy, and he'll just be a very sound, good piece in a defense that gets pass rushed by committee. So, McKenna, how do you feel about the AJ Epenesa pick?
Yeah, it's an A. You know, value alone, it's A, because I think Bleacher Report had him as their third highest defensive lineman in the draft. So like, if you're getting allegedly the third best defensive lineman at 54, it's an A. And you know, you said he won't be an elite pass rusher. I agree with that, but I think he might be an elite defensive lineman because of how he played in Iowa. He played he just didn't just rush the passer. He liked going after the running back. He liked playing in the run game. So he'll be a very complete defensive lineman. And you're going to pair that with Ed Oliver, who has become, I think he started off his rookie season not necessarily the best, I think, but he sort of rounded out his game a little bit. So when you're pairing AJ Epenesa and add Oliver, you're going to have a very well-rounded part of your defensive line. We're very young and willing to learn. And you guys have talked about it before, AJ Epenesa, he's power. He's going to be a technician, which is nice. Like, I think he can definitely learn more pass rushing moves from the likes of Mario Addison and Jerry Hughes. So I think it's a great pick. I think, yeah, he'll never be an elite player, but he'll be like a Mario Addison, where he averages, 8 to 10 sacks every season. But when you have guys around him who are also averaging 6.5, 7.5 sacks every season, you're going to have a consistent pass rush, and you just don't know where it's going to come from. And yeah, I think it's a great pick, and he's going to be able to stop the run as well. It's a great pick, and I'm so surprised that he fell. And a lot of pass rushers fell this draft.
A lot of them did.
Curtis Weaver didn't get drafted until the 5th or 6th round. And Bradley and I fell to the 6th as well. So it was just a weird draft for pass rushers, but AJ Epenesa has the potential to be one of the better ones of this class, if not the best.
Yeah, he's not dissimilar from Shaq Lawson from a play perspective, in that he sets the edge in the run game. He likes to get involved in the run game, as you say. As a pass rusher, he wins with power. So maybe that's kind of what they're hoping for, is he'll play that Shaq Lawson role immediately before ultimately, hopefully, developing into a player better than Shaq Lawson. I guess Shaq Lawson's a $10 million a year player, but like, Shaq Lawson never really reached his fullest potential. He developed into a solid player, which is kind of what AJ Epenesa, he's not as good as Shaq Lawson is now, obviously, because Shaq Lawson's now a fifth-year player and AJ Epenesa is a rookie. But AJ Epenesa is going to fill a similar role before hopefully kind of supplanting that and becoming a more, not a flashy player, but a more consistent player who reaches his potential. So do we all give it A's across the board here for AJ Epenesa?
A across the board.
Hell yeah, AJ Epenesa, good for you, my guy. Good for you. You're getting A's out here. Well graded, 4.0 GPA. Moving on, in the second round, pick 22 in the second round, 86th overall, the Buffalo Bills took What's that?
Third round.
Who cares, man? Who cares? I just got a pain in my lower gum, so this is going to be a challenge to get through the rest of the podcast. Ooh, boy. Third round, pick 22, pick 86 overall. The Buffalo Bills select Utah running back Zach Moss. Compared to a player we love on this podcast, we bring up this player on the podcast all the damn time. He's a player everyone looks back on their childhood, with rose-tinted glasses, and they look back and they think about the players that made them fall in love with the game of football. For me, I have a couple of those guys, but Marshawn Lynch is undoubtedly one of those guys who made me fall in love with the game of football. And Zach Moss has been compared to Marshawn Lynch. He's been described as budget beast mode by some. I think Mina Kimes in particular called him a budget Marshawn Lynch, which is, hey, I like that. I very much like Marshawn Lynch. I love his play style. So if they're getting a player who kind of emulates Marshawn Lynch and how he plays the game, I think that's a great pick. I think the values here, watching Zach Moss, we kind of said in past mock drafts that he's not dissimilar to Devin Singletary, and I'll stand by that. He's not dissimilar to Devin Singletary. He's kind of shifty, similar build at least. Kind of, shiftier hips, as Rich Kowalski would say. You say Devin Singletary has shifty hips, and Zach Moss to an extent has that, but what he has that Devin Singletary does not have is that power. He's a bowling ball. He's not necessarily a bowling ball, but he looks for contact. As he said to the Buffalo media, which we are not part of, after the draft, he likes to make defenders make business decisions. Yeah, when they're looking to tackle him, he searches for contact and he likes to run people over. Devin Singletary is not a not powerful runner, but that's not really his strength. His strength is more so patience. He's gonna beat people like when he's in the open field. He's not,
He'll lower the shoulder.
Yeah, he's not avoiding contact in the open field, but like when he hands the ball off, he's going to just kind of sit back there and be patient until he can find a hole, whereas Zach Moss is just going to hit the hole and put his head down. So that's kind of a compliment. they didn't have the chance to take A.J. Dillon, who's a player we mocked to him in the 4th round a lot. But A.J. Dillon would have been that, you know, we liked him because he's a power back. Zach Moss, I think he is a power back, and I think he offers more. People say he has pass-catching ability. Watching some tape of his, a lot of his receptions just came because he just kind of hovered around the line of scrimmage. And, like, he's not a route runner out of the backfield by any means. A lot of his receptions were on screens, or he was just kind of hovering around the line of scrimmage, and then the quarterback got him the ball, and then he just kind of made his money after that. He didn't make money, actually. It was college, but you understand what I'm saying.
Now he's making money.
Out there in Utah, of all places. But Zach Moss, a good compliment to Devin Singletary. I think that's good value in the third round, one of the better running backs in the class. A lot of people said he was the best running back in the class. To get him in the third round to compliment with your other third-round running back in Devin Singletary, you have a two-headed monster there. You have guys who are going to beat you in a variety of ways. Either Singletary's just kind of going to outweight you and run past you that way, or Zach Moss is going to run you over. That's a complete backfield. And Josh Allen. Josh Allen's going to jump over you. So they have a very fun, athletic, young backfield. I like that. I like the Zach Moss pick, especially if he ever reaches – I don't know if he's ever going to be a Marshawn Lynch type of player, but if he has that play style, you know, I like the Zach Moss pick. I'm giving it an A. So, D'Lo, how do you feel about the Zach Moss pick?
I gave it an A as well. I thought it was a great, great pick. I mean, there were a lot of mock drafts that linked Moss with the Bills in the third round. It makes perfect sense. Moss is just, he's a really good complement to Devin Singletary. He's a one-cut runner. He's a downhill runner. He's got no problem running people over, like you said. I would still say Singletary's a little more shifty, but both of them in the open field can make moves. They can make people miss. So it's a really good pick. And also, you know, Moss is a little bigger, so that he does really well in pass protection. So that's something that obviously coaches love, because they don't have to necessarily, you know, coach that up early on so that their quarterback doesn't get destroyed. So it's something that you can use Singletary and Moss interchangeably at any time, because they have, you know, similar skill sets, strong understandings of the offense, and I think it's a really good combination for Buffalo.
McKenna.
Love it. I love the pick. I think, I mean, if we're grading it another A, again, just on value alone, people considered him the best running back in the class, but in a loaded running back class, I can really talk well today.
Nice.
When Devin Singletary and Zach Moss are on the field at the same time, what are you preparing for a defense? Like, how do you stop that? Like, if Devin Singletary gets the ball, like, he is going to just run, you know, he's going to run around you. But then if Zach Moss gets the ball, you have to be prepared to get run over and consistently get run over. So it's a great pick. It's great value in the third round. I think he can improve Devin Singletary's game and vice versa. And if you're a defense, you know, it's a fourth quarter, you've been facing Devin Singletary and Zach Moss all game, you're just going to be so worn down at that point. Mm-hmm. Either you're tired because Devin Singletary's, you know, making you miss, or you're just completely getting, you know, steamrolled. So it just plays perfectly into this sort of offense Buffalo wants to run. So I think it's a great pick, and the Bills need more weapons on offense, and he's a great weapon.
Yeah, another reason why I like it is it always gives the Bills' backfield a chance to succeed, because let's face it, sometimes players aren't having a good day. Like, there were many times last year, Frank Gore, the majority of the year, just wasn't having a good day. Like, yes. Even in short yardage situations, which were supposed to be his bread and butter, he just wasn't picking up the yardage. Devin Singletary at points just wasn't having a good day. So given the dichotomy, I mean, again, I would still argue that they're not completely different types of players, but they're different enough. So Zach Moss and Devin Singletary. So given the dichotomy between the two players, like, if Singletary can't find the holes on a specific day, Zach Moss can just run him over, like, and he'll open the holes. Like, and if Zach Moss just isn't having a great day, Devin Singletary can outweigh the defenders and kind of beat him that way. Just given the dichotomy between the two play styles, this Bills backfield, it's just always going to have a chance to succeed. And I don't think, I mean, people are calling Zach Moss a complimentary back, which I think I have on this podcast even, but, like, I see that could be a thing, but also there's a good possibility it's more of a 1A, 1B type of thing. Like, I think they're going to see Singletary's still going to be the featured back, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that Zach Moss, on some days sees more carries than Singletary, or on like or more total touches, or at some points even starts. Because I think what they are, what you have now, are two very young, very talented running backs with high upside. And I think Singletary is still, as of right now, the guy. But I would not be surprised if Zach Moss takes the ball and run with it, literally and figuratively. I would not be surprised if he ultimately becomes the starting running back, just because I think he has that high of upside. And again, I like Singletary. I've made my thoughts on Devin Singletary very clear throughout the entirety of this podcast's existence. I very much like Devin Singletary. But I think with him and Zach Moss, you have a very stacked young backfield, a 1A, 1B type situation, a two-headed monster. And I love the pick. I gave it an A. So are we good to move on to the next pick here, or does anyone else have anything to add on Zach Moss?
Let's go day three.
Yeah, day three.
Day three, the Bills,
wild
I
out.
Think they got a bit weird. Yeah, I think they got a little bit weird on day three. I think they took a lot of safe picks, which is fine to an extent, but also part of me on day three is like, take an athlete. Like, I understand you could argue like that's what... Like, if when you take too many athletes and you trust yourself to mold these athletes into good players, there's a lot of room for error there. So to an extent, you kind of just want to take the safe player. But also, it's day three. There's no confirmation. There's no, you know, you don't know if these players are going to actually pan out or not, regardless of if they're dubbed a safe pick or not. So to an extent, you just kind of want to take the athlete, which really is not what the Bills did in this on day three, in my opinion. They go with Gabriel Davis in round four, pick 128 overall. They took Gabriel Davis, wide receiver, out of UCF. And this was over players like Antonio Gandy-Golden, who went after him, above of Donovan Peoples-Jones. And I'm not saying Gabriel Davis isn't a good athlete. I think Gabriel Davis is a good receiver, a good outside guy, kind of adds a bigger bodied presence. Again, strength, or no, not strength, but like size isn't necessarily... He's not huge. Like, he's not Antonio Gandy-Golden size. He's like 6'2". But immediately he becomes one of the taller receivers in the receiving core, just because the Bills have kind of had, you know, smaller guys for the most part. So Gabriel Davis adds a reliable, bigger guy on the outside, in my opinion. But over guys like Antonio Gandy-Golden, who's like 6'4", Donovan Peoples-Jones, who is just an insane athlete. I guess if you want to make the safer pick, Gabriel Davis is the guy that you pick, just given his productivity at wide receiver. I just don't think, I don't know. I don't know if I like him over a guy like Antonio Gandy-Golden or over a guy like Donovan Peoples-Jones, who are players that they took Gabriel Davis over. So I'll give it like a B or a B minus. McKenna, how do you feel about Gabriel Davis?
I think if grading the pick, it's maybe I might even say an A again, just for the fact that he is a different sort of wide receiver. The fact that he's not afraid to go up and make contested catches. He is bigger than all the other starting wide receivers that the Bills have. I'm not including Duke Williams there because he's not a starting wide receiver. And I think it's an A just because it's different and it's something the Bills needed. That was an actual, you know, hole in their roster. And they filled it in round four with a player who I think will make the roster and I think will be starting week one. And I think Donovan Peoples-Jones, you brought him up. He's not a different enough receiver. Like, we talked about this before. If the Bills drafted him, it's just adding to strength, not really filling another hole on the roster. So I think it's a good pick. A might be a little high, so B plus, I guess, B.
D-Lo?
I mean, I gave it a B plus. I think it's a solid choice. If you liked Gandy-Golden, I think that could have been a pick. I feel like Davis... I don't know. I like Davis's contested catchability. I mean, it's kind of hard because right now, as we get into this crew of wide receivers, there's a lot of similarity between them. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm kind of struggling with saying, all right, you know, it kind of comes down to personal preference. They seem to like Davis. They seem to like his hands a little bit more. He's not necessarily a flat out burner, but he could still get vertical on defensive back. So the one challenge with Davis is he doesn't really have a lot of positional, you know, versatility right now. Everything
right,
I saw
he's
him,
a boundary guy.
He was playing just like the X. Like that was yeah. It. So, you know, if they need somebody to be a little bit more flexible, this could be a little bit of a quizzical pick. But I think he's a guy who's going to compete at the bottom of the chart of the draft or the draft chart, damn, depth chart for wide receiver. And I think it's an intriguing pick. I think he'll do fine. But he is the type of player who I think, you know, however this training camp goes, this rookie camp, not being able to actually like get the guys into the actual building, I think it might, you know, push him down a little bit with his, you know, development and growth, because he won't be able to start off running like most picks do in past years.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with a B for my grade. Like, you look at his college production, 1,200 yards last year, 12 touchdowns, 800 yards and 7 scores the year before. 7 scores. No, it's 8 scores. Ah, I don't know my American history, but it's 4
scores.
4 scores
7 years ago.
Nice. 4 scores 7 years ago. This is not good. Wow. Guys, I told you I'm hungover. Not a good day for old Kyle. But, like, you look at the college production, it's there. But as D'Lo says, the positional versatility, like, he's a sideline guy. You hope that he doesn't have great speed. He's not slow, but yeah. I wouldn't classify him as a burner. He's kind of a hope that he can go up and get it. He's a sideline threat, a big play threat, you could say. And that's a good developmental piece to have in the fourth round. That's a good developmental piece to have as a young guy who does, to an extent, offer you something you don't have, that go-up contested catchability on the sideline, youth at that as well. That's a good developmental piece to have. But when Antonio Gandy-Golden was there, like, I think I like Antonio Gandy-Golden more than I like Gabriel Davis. They both kind of offer similar things to a team. And if I had to choose between the two, I think I would have gone with Antonio Gandy-Golden. So just given, I like Gabriel Davis. I think he offers something to the team. He's depth. He's youth. He's a developmental piece. But given the fact that he could have gotten all that out of Antonio Gandy-Golden, who I think has a higher upside, you know, B to B minus is where I max out with his grade. Just because I think he could have gotten a better option. A better option who offers the same thing. So does that wrap it up on Gabriel Davis?
Wait, do you think the Bills were expecting Antonio Gandy-Golden to be available in round 5? Because they went
even
to...
Even if they were, I don't think they would have taken.
Well, they went two receivers.
They did, but I think they kind of took their player who... I don't know. I honestly think they weren't even all that interested in Antonio Gandy-Golden. I could be completely wrong, but I think to an extent it was a smokescreen. Yeah. You heard in the lead-up that the Bills are the team who they talk to the most. Or, you know, Antonio Gandy-Golden talked to the Bills the most in the lead-up to the draft. Almost every single time you hear that, it's a smokescreen. The team wants the media and other teams to think that they have a big interest in them, when in all actuality, they really couldn't care less. So I think they probably wanted Antonio Gandy-Golden. I think they liked him as a player. But, I mean, when they could have taken him, they took another player.
That's true.
Gabriel Davis. Yeah. They took another player at his position. So I don't necessarily think, even if Gandy-Golden was there in the fifth. Was he there when they picked again? I don't even remember.
No, Washington.
No. Took him in the fourth.
Washington scooped him. I don't think they would have taken him, even if he were there in the fifth round. I think they got their player who checks those boxes in Gabriel Davis. Again, he checks the boxes, but I just think Antonio Gandy-Golden probably would have been a better pick. So, moving on to probably the Bills' most interesting pick in the draft. In the fifth round, they grab Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm, State Farm. No one's made that joke before. Jake Fromm, I like the pick to an extent, but then again, it's weird. It's kind of a weird pick because we've talked about on the podcast before, in your backup quarterback, you kind of want a player who to an extent emulates the play style of your starting quarterback. You want a guy where if your quarterback should go down, if your starting quarterback were to go down, you bring in a guy who is similar in play style, similar physically, similar athletically, so your offense doesn't fold too much. So your offense doesn't change too much. It's philosophy. So the playbook doesn't close that much. That's why you want a quarterback, a backup quarterback who's similar to your starter. Jake Fromm is perhaps the polar opposite of Josh Allen in almost every single way. Josh Allen's weaknesses are Jake Fromm's strengths and vice versa. That's why it's so weird, because, I mean, Josh Allen can throw the ball the length of the field. He's an insane athlete. He can, you know, run around the backfield 20 yards. He can be on the 50, run back to the 30, throw to the end zone. And he does that quite frequently. Yeah. like the decision, and like, again, that's kind of a knock on his decision making to an extent. His decision making is kind of weird. Jake Fromm doesn't have the arm strength, doesn't have that insane athletic ability, but what he does have is very good football IQ. You heard this all throughout the draft because it's true. Jake Fromm is a very smart quarterback, and from what I've heard, from the ESPN broadcast that everyone else was watching, but apparently he impressed teams with his football IQ in interviews, in those Zoom calls that everyone was having. Maybe he just had Wikipedia pulled up. Maybe that's why he was impressing all the teams. But Jake Fromm is a very smart quarterback. You could say he's a game manager, but, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, you kind of, if you want a backup quarterback who can manage a game, that's a good quality to have in a backup quarterback. I think Jake Fromm, his ceiling is probably smart, intelligent backup quarterback who's not going to lose you a game should he ever come in. But again, just given the play style, it's weird. It's just weird to have. It's weird to have a player who's the complete opposite. So if Josh Allen were to ever go down, your offense is vastly changing. You're going from, like, you're not afraid to take shots. You're not afraid to send John Brown on routes 30 to 40 yards down the field because Jake Fromm's, he can't, I don't know if he can get the ball there. I don't know if I trust him to get the ball to him down the field. So your offense kind of changes to more of a dink and dunk kind of intermediate style of play. And you can argue, well, that's what Josh Allen does. I mean, Josh Allen kind of shines in the short to intermediate game. That's kind of where his strengths are. Yes, he can throw the deep ball. I mean, he can get the ball there. Yeah. I don't know if he can throw the deep ball.
It gets there.
He can get the ball there at least.
The vicinity.
So maybe the offense, I think it does change. I think the philosophy changes because with Josh Allen, you're not afraid to take those shots. With Jake Fromm, you can't take those shots. But the football IQ is there. He'd come in and still move the ball, hopefully. He's competing with Matt Barkley straight away. I think he's probably going to supplant Matt Barkley when all is said and done. But just, I guess you look at it as they got their backup quarterback on a very cheap deal for the next 4 years. That's, I mean, in itself, that's good value. But I'm going to give it like a B or a B minus again, because I think the value is good. Brandon Bean said the value was just too much to pass up on there. And, you know, by taking him, then Belichick doesn't get him. Belichick can't turn him into whatever. So that's, you know, intelligent to an extent that you're kind of preventing New England from getting its quarterback. There was no reports that New England was interested in Jake Fromm, but you can probably assume they were interested in Jake Fromm, given that the only other quarterback on their roster, or their only quarterbacks, are Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. Jake Fromm probably, you could argue, would win that quarterback competition. But Jake Fromm, I think, he's an intelligent quarterback. He's a smart quarterback. Those are synonyms. he's just different than Josh Allen, which is why it's weird. It's weird to take a developmental quarterback who is the polar opposite of your franchise quarterback, where to the point where if Josh Allen were to ever go down, your offense changes. But I don't know. I'm still going to give it a B just because I think Jake Fromm's a good player who will be a solid backup. So, McKenna, how do you feel about the Jake Fromm pick?
I'm going to grade it, I guess, like a C+. Okay. I don't, like, it's weird. I'm still, like, wrapping my head around it. But everything you said is correct. Like, he is an accurate quarterback. He's a smart quarterback. He's, I guess, you know, like, this is such a cliche football word. He's a battle-tested quarterback coming from the SEC. He knows what it's like playing against top-tier defenses, but he's like just the antithesis of Josh Allen, where Josh Allen is, you know, a gunslinger. He likes when the pocket breaks down. That's where he's like almost at his most comfortable because he can start moving around and just start chucking the ball deep. But I think parts of the offense fit Jake Fromm because, you know, there are a couple of times this season where the Bills, like the first game against the Jets, for example, they just started off the game tempo, but it was just short intermediate passes just to get the ball down the field, which is something Jake Fromm can do. So your offense doesn't completely change, but, you know, like your identity does change, which is something you said, Kyle, which is, I sort of doesn't necessarily make sense, but when you have Josh Allen as your quarterback, you can do way more things if Jake Fromm mm-hmm. is your quarterback. So it's I think it could pan out for them. Like, if they want to go and, you know, win a Super Bowl in the next few seasons, they're going to need a quarterback. They're going to need a backup quarterback who can win them games. or not even, just not win them games, not lose them games, because their defense is good enough to put them in situations where all they have to do is put up 17 points, which Jake Fromm could probably do, and I think he probably is a better backup than Matt Barkley just due to his youth. You know, I think he is more athletic than Matt Barkley, just the fact that he's, you know, probably 10, 12 years younger than him.
Yeah.
So
just based off biology alone.
Yeah, just by that, he's... So it's an interesting pick. I think it'll eventually pan out for both Jake Fromm and the Bills, because I think he'll probably come in and win a couple games next season, because Josh Allen will probably get hurt just due to his play style and due to the fact that he likes to take hits, but he takes a lot of hits.
No, he likes to take
hits. he likes the pain. So, yeah, it's... And you have it away from Bill Belichick, so, you know, that's a win. I guess, yeah, B. I'll bump it up to a B.
Like, to go off of what you were saying there, like, a big part of the Bills' offense is the impromptu nature of Josh Allen's game. Like, a big part of it, as you say, is when the pocket breaks down and Josh Allen just moves and either takes off and picks up yards, or he just kind of moves around until somebody gets open and then he finds them. That's a big part of the Bills' offense. With Jake Fromm, I think obviously with any quarterback who's not Josh Allen, you eliminate that entirely. And Jake Fromm doesn't have the athletic ability to emulate that. He doesn't have the athletic ability to go in a situation where if the pocket breaks down, he can move around and make something happen out of nothing, which is kind of one of Josh Allen's strengths, is the ability to make something out of nothing. So just given their different play styles, it's a bit weird. So D'Lo, how do you feel about it?
I gave it a B. I think it's a solid B. I get where they're going. They're kind of looking to see who could take over for Matt Barkley, and essentially they drafted another Matt Barkley. So, you know, they just need a quarterback that, like you've said, everybody really values his intelligence. They kind of talk about him, you know, from being a coach on the field. And pretty much they just want a player who could step in and run a game on a whim. They're not really anticipating somebody who's going to see a massive amount of time on the field. If they would have, they should have just, you know, drafted Jordan Love. But, you know, they're kind of expecting Fromm to come in and be the type of player who, like McKenna said, he won't lose them games. You know, he's not going to throw games away. He's going to make intelligent decisions, and he's not going to force things, you know, and overplay his ability. And if any offense can get back into a timing rhythm with a backup quarterback, you saw the Bills 2 years ago do that. When Matt Barkley had his first game with the Bills, and who'd they blow out?
The Jets.
Was it the Jets?
The New York Jets.
So we saw that happening. It's challenging too with the Bills, because it's hard to find a backup who has the same skill set as a Josh Allen. And that,
oh, it's so hard.
That athleticism. If you're getting somebody,
I
who
mean,
has
Tyree Jackson. Yeah,
if you're getting that athleticism, he's going to start. So. You know, it's challenging to find that guy, and so I think the Bills really look for somebody who's intelligent enough to step in, run the offense, be a guy who's probably going to be a benefit in the quarterback room with how he breaks down film. I mean,
what was his wunderlick? I think that's what's going to be the deciding factor here for me. If he had a good wunderlick, I'm on board.
Let's look it up.
That's the only thing I care about in a quarterback is wunderlick.
Wunderlick.
Hold up. I'm looking this up. I'm getting to the bottom of this. Jake Fromm's wunderlick.
Oh, he excels.
Yeah, let's see. Hopefully Ned doesn't pop up.
35.
That's pretty good. Only
not as good as Nate Stanley.
Look at who's number one. Nate Stanley.
Tua scored a 13.
Nate Stanley.
Ooh.
Tua had how many?
A 13.
It's not great.
I think that's what Josh Allen had or something. His was...
Josh Allen had a good wunderlick, from what I remember.
What is the wunderlick? Can someone explain it to me?
It's just, like, practical questions. Oh. Josh Allen had a 37.
Oh, shoot.
It's not even, like, hard. It's just, like, practical questions.
Like, give me an example of a question.
I took a mock Wunderlic a few weeks ago, and it was just, like, the stupidest thing. I didn't even finish it because my computer kept freezing. So maybe I failed. Maybe that's why I was
freezing. There's, like, how? Wait, what? A Wunderlic of one?
Who had a Wunderlic? I mean, I know Vince Young had, like, a really bad Wunderlic because it was funny because at one point they had Ryan Fitzpatrick. It was, like, the 2012 offseason or the 2013 offseason. It was the 2012 offseason. They had Ryan Fitzpatrick. Who had the highest Wunderlic of all time, then they had Vince Young, who had the lowest Wunderlic of all time. So, but out of these, like, on the one I took, it was like, out of these dates, which one is the latest? And just like you had to look at the years. Just like
damn. I'm gonna take one of these later.
Yeah, me too. That's my Wonderlic score. Would I be drafted?
Yeah, it's just like you have to think about them for like 10 seconds, and then I can't even talk. I have a low Wonderlic score. Like you need to just think about it for a couple seconds, and just think about all the possibilities. Think about what they're asking, and then you're gonna do well on it. So moving on, I've made a huge mistake. I got out of the Bills. Whatever, it doesn't matter. I remember who they took in the sixth round. Yeah, with their first of two sixth-round picks. There we go. I'm rolling with my speech today. The Bills took Tyler Bass, kicker out of Georgia Southern. I know, D'Lo, you've watched hours upon hours of film on Tyler Bass. So what did you grade this pick?
Oh, I gave it a C-. I probably should have given it a lower grade, but I'm just going to trust Brandon Bean's magic with it because I don't want to question Bean anymore because somehow everything he touches turns to gold. So, but I just hate taking a kicker at this point. I mean, is there something wrong with Steven Hauschka? Is there a reason they couldn't take another position player and then get a kicker,
as a UDFA?
That's something. It's a kicker. He's accurate. He's got a big leg. Although last year he didn't have a stellar season. He only made 71% of his kicks last year. So, and his career long is 50. So, I mean, even though he has a big leg, there's still some accuracy issues. I mean, maybe he's going to be a kickoff specialist for a little bit. Maybe it's somebody just to let Hauschka have a few fewer reps. If that was the case, you could find a UDFA to do that.
I was going to say, if they carry three kickers, three kicker punters, I will die.
And apparently Vednik's going to compete as a punter.
Yeah, he's going to be a
punter. I read that recently where they said his number one thing is going to be a punter. But whatever, it's just you're drafting a kicker.
In the sixth round.
At least it's not number 17 overall, but still it's like...
He's no Seabass.
He's no Seabass. I mean, he only allowed, I think, like 9 kickoff returns last year, so maybe he is going to be kind of a kickoff specialist. Who knows? It's just quizzical because if you really like Hauschka, didn't they sign Hauschka to
a 2-year deal?
Extension, they did.
So what? Like,
so what's the thinking? Nobody knows. Only Brandon Bean knows. It doesn't. It's weird. I'm gonna give it a D+. I'm gonna give it a D+. Yeah, I'm giving it a plus. because, like, best case scenario. Let's look at best case scenario. You have your kicker for the next, a young kicker for the next 4 years on a dirt cheap deal. So then you can take the extra, what, 500 grand you're spending on Steven, you would be spending on Steven Hauschka's deal every year. No, Steven Hauschka's making considerable money for a kicker. Yeah. Steven Hauschka, how much is he making? Yeah, let's look that up. I think he's making like 4 million or something.
Good for Steven Hauschka.
I could be completely wrong. I could be talking out of my ass, but I think Steven Hauschka's making like, he's making 4 million per season, Steven Hauschka. So
with his head of hair.
That's the.
With his head of hair. Oh, what a guy! That's all I care about in my NFL kickers, if they have good hair or not.
That's a good quality to have. Just as a human, you want good hair.
True.
But like with Steven Hauschka, I mean, if they could save, I mean, that kind of just unveils the thinking, doesn't it? Like if they can save that $4 million. You don't just pay $4 million to a kicker because you got a younger guy with more egg strength, I was going to say. More egg strength. I got Easter on the mind. You get a younger guy with more leg strength, more long-term ability, more, you know, better now and will be better in 5 or 10 years, obviously, because Hauschka is probably going to be out of the league in 5 or 10 years, unless he pulls a Adam Vinatieri, which I really don't see happening. But let's be real. Steven Hauschka has kind of struggled in recent years, especially 2 years ago. He fell off a cliff in the second or, you know, the later part of the season after he got hit by that Jets player. His season kind of derailed. And then last year he had highs, the highest highs and the lowest lows. He was the definition of inconsistent last year for the most part. So you take, but my big thing is taking a kicker. I would be completely fine with signing a kicker as a UDFA. And it's not like they needed, it's not like they have needs. And if you're filling needs in the sixth round, you're a bad team anyway. So I understand taking a kicker. It's just weird. Why wouldn't you take an athlete? Why wouldn't you take an athlete who you can kind of mold into something, like a defensive back who you think you can mold into something, or a wide receiver athlete that you think you can mold into something? I don't understand. or like a running back athlete or someone. I mean, they kind of did that with Isaiah Hodgins. They took a wide receiver athlete. But like, I understand the thinking. I understand, like, hopefully we get our replacement for Steven Hauschka. We get him on a 4-year deal, dirt cheap. I understand that. But also, there's a possibility that Hauschka wins the job. I think it's probably likely that Hauschka wins the job. And Tyler Bass, I mean, they just cut their 6th-round pick or put him on the practice squad. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if it's a value pick. I don't know if I like the value of a kicker in the 6th round. And again, we joked on this podcast like they should take a kicker. I did not want them to take a kicker. I don't think any team at any point wants their team to draft a kicker. Just do it after the draft. That's when most teams do it. That's when most teams get their kicker, is after the draft. But you take one in the 6th round. Obviously, they like his upside. They like him enough to draft him, to spend a draft pick on him. It's just weird. It's just weird value to take a kicker in the 6th round when you got Steven Hauschka, when you're paying Steven Hauschka $4 million a year. We'll see. We'll see. Obviously, one of them's not going to make the roster. And so there's a possibility. Again, best case scenario, they got their kicker for the next 4 years on a dirt cheap deal. Worst case, they cut their 6th round pick. So who does anyone care enough to take this?
No, but I'm going to use my time to tell you who had the highest Wunderlic score of all time.
Thank you. Is it Fitz?
No, it is not. He is the 5th highest. No, 3rd highest, sorry. But
who is the highest?
It is Pat McKinley, a punter.
Pat McKinley?
A punter in 1975. He recorded the highest.
They were given the Wunderlic in 75?
Yeah, he got a 50 out of 50.
Wow.
And then he created a toy company where he became very famous.
Good for him. Hey. My guy's killing
Wait. Wunderlic. A Western New York guy had a really high Wunderlic score.
Let's look up Western New York Wunderlic. This is the Google podcast.
Oh my gosh, now I'm thinking. Hold on. I swear like Mike Mamula had a high one coming out.
Who the hell is Mike Mamula?
You're right, defensive lineman. He had the second highest.
He played defensive end. He came out of Boston College.
He had a 49 out of 50, second highest all time. Ooh.
See?
Mike Mamula.
He came out of Boston College. Yeah.
Useless knowledge of old people.
Oh. He was a 7th overall pick.
He was drafted in like 95.
All right. We are one hour deep.
Let's talk about the last ones. Let's go.
Yeah. D'Lo, what are your thoughts on Isaiah Hodgins and Dane Jackson?
All right. So I like Hodgins. I think it's an intriguing pick with the 7th round. He's a guy, once again, another guy who will go up and go get the ball. He arguably has some of the best hands of any receiver. What knocks him down is that he's not a blazing fast guy. He's not, you know, I think he ran like a 4.61, and comparatively that isn't stellar. You know, he's got to work hard to find space. You know, not being able to, you know, have that burner speed allows defenders to stay on his hip easily. But with that said, he battles for the ball, and if the ball's thrown near him, he's going to catch it. So that's pretty good with a quarterback who has semi-accurate accuracy issues. And then in the 7th round, you got Dane Jackson. He's a cornerback from Pittsburgh. He's an aggressive player. Like, you watch him and you're like, all right, this guy plays with a little chip on his shoulder. But one of the challenges is sometimes he gets overly aggressive, so sometimes that burns him. But learning from, let's say, Sean McDermott in that secondary is probably going to help him. It's not, you know, I'm not going to say he's going to be, he might be a practice squad guy. That might be his ideal place, but he is somebody who's probably going to work with Taron Johnson a little bit in the slot.
Yeah, Isaiah Hodgins, or as the Bills media department put it out, or spelt it in their text, Isaiah Hortons of coffee fame. But no, Isaiah Hodgins out of Oregon State, he's kind of like a good red zone threat, right?
Yeah.
Because as 6'4". You say, D'Lo, he's not like the fastest guy. He's not a burner, but he is a good contested catch guy. He has good hands, and he's going to battle for the football. So that's kind of, you either want to keep him around the line of scrimmage because you don't want to set him on deep routes because he's not going to beat anyone. But I guess you could set him on deep routes if you want to because he can battle for the ball. But I think kind of what they're getting with him is a red zone threat, which is something they really don't have, a tight end or a wide receiver. They really don't have that bona fide red zone threat, which I think to an extent is kind of what they're addressing here with Isaiah Hodgins, just given his play style, as you say, D'Lo. Not fast, but a battle for the ball. That's what you want in the end zone when you're throwing it up. That's what you want in the red zone when you're throwing it up in the end zone. There we go. And Dane Jackson, look, I'd be talking out of my ass if I said I knew a damn thing about Dane Jackson, so I'm not going to say anything about Dane Jackson. Sure, D'Lo, I agree with what you say.
Thank you.
And I just know the last thing they, the last Pitt cornerback they had was Lafayette Pitts.
There it is.
So let's just hope that Dane Jackson turns out to be half the player that Lafayette Pitts was, and he'll be wearing a gold jacket when all is said and done. So Isaiah Hodgins, I'll give a B. Dane Jackson, I'll give a C. I'll give it an average grade. But I don't know anything. You know what? I'm not going to give a grade on Dane Jackson because it would be ignorant to
incomplete.
Do so, because I know nothing about him. So McKenna, what are your thoughts on both of these
points? I think Isaiah Hodgins, yeah, red zone threat, you know, at line of scrimmage guy. He can just, you know, he'll one cut, get open, and then just win the ball with his hands, which is what I like about him as a receiver. He catches the ball with his hands. He has good hands. That's something the Bills have sort of lacked in the past couple years. They struggle with drops, which has hurt Josh Allen's completion percentage. So having just a sure-handed guy will help him out a lot. And, you know, in the red zone, all he needs to do is just jump up and catch it pretty much. And that's what he's good at. So perfect for the Bills. And, yeah, I don't know anything about the corner that they drafted. I don't even remember his name. Even though he said it.
Dane Jackson.
Dane Jackson. So, yeah. You know, you're working with one of the better, you know, secondaries in the league. He can learn a lot in his possibly short time in Buffalo, or maybe he goes on to have a tremendous career and, you know, he wins, I don't know, a bunch of Super Bowls.
I mean, he's going to be learning from the best, yeah. Josh Norman.
Fun fact, I'm pretty sure there was a hockey player named Dane Jackson who played for the Sabres.
It all comes together.
No. And I swear it in the 90s. He played for Vancouver. I remember that, but I swear this dude was in Rochester for a little bit in the 90s.
I
looked up Dane Jackson. He joined the Buffalo Sabres in 1995.
See, that 90s, that's when I was like 13, 14, 15, and I had nothing better to do with my time. So that's why I have all this useless knowledge about Mike Mamula and Dane Jackson.
Right, you remember those teams. Just like how I remember, who? Oh, I can't pull a name. Andre Sequeira is not that... obscure. I'm trying to think of an obscure name. Daniel Paille is not obscure.
Ooh.
Mike Card. Is that obscure? Mike Card?
Mike Card is obscure.
Mike Card.
Is that crazy enough for you? Is that a deep enough pull? Mike Card.
That's a good one.
Ooh, love Mike Card. Good player. Mark Mancari. Is that a deep enough pull?
Number 12?
Yes, I think he was number 12, and he won the AHL hardest shot competition a bunch. Mark Mancari. Good guy. Mark Mancari, come on the podcast if you're listening. Nathan Paige, is that a deep enough pull? So that'll wrap it up on this week's Kyle's Leggy Variety Hour brought to you by USA. I just had a stroke while saying that. Brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter at The Bills Wire, on Facebook at Bills Wire, on Instagram at The Bills Wire. Make sure to follow D'Lo on Twitter at
Jay DeLauro.
Make sure to follow McKenna on Twitter at
McKenna Middle.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Salagi. You can, yeah, read Bills Wire if you want to. Some of the articles are good where we talk about what the Buffalo Bills did in the draft, kind of analysis a little bit, more so just what other people are saying. you can, yeah, check it out on Bills Wire. And thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Buffalo. 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 Buffalo, 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 Buffalo.
I love Buffalo, New York.